Hello, everyone, and welcome to our pre-season special. Now, as you guys know, I mentioned that we would be indeed having an interview, a live interview. So this is going to be obviously a lot more informal than our usual show. And we're going to be speaking to Tyler and Charlie, two gents who run the podcast Believing the Bizarre. And they're going to be sharing with us what they deem to be one of the scariest stories they've each heard personally. And then we'll discuss, and then we can tell you all about how to find their show. Hello, gents. How are you doing today?
Great. Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, really good. Thank you for having us on. I was really excited about this. Thank you.
You're more than welcome. And Charlie, you've actually sent a story into the show before.
Yeah, I wish I knew the number and time or season, but I don't. It was a
which story was it? The puppets?
It was the one of our. I saw the puppets in the theater.
Puppets.
It was terrifying, and it changed my life.
Yeah, it's one of them where the contents are so visceral. I do remember, I can't remember it verbatim, but I think when we spoke last time, I said I remember the story because
yeah.
You do not receive an experience every day that has puppets in a theater.
Yeah. Essentially, like, it's, those dolls came up behind, like, the ghost light in the theater, the dolls' shadows were in the ghost light, and they chased me out of the theater. I tried to shut the door. And as I was shutting, I was trying to lock it. The door was shaking. And when I got locked, it just finally, everything stopped.
Wow. Yeah, that's, see, that's, I always call it a validator. But for me, that's a validator. A friend of mine has a similar experience. He is a judo person. I'm not too sure what you would call that. But basically, he went over to the USA. He's friends with Paddy the Baddie.
Oh yeah,
you know, the UFC guy. Well, he lives about 2 minutes from where I live, and he's friends with him, and he went over there to the US with him very early on before he actually signed, I think. And he was staying in a comedy club and because there was nowhere else for him to stay, and he was staying there alone for some reason, and he could hear a party going on next door and was trying to get asleep. And about 2 a.m. he thought to himself, you know what? I'm just going to go in and I'll just drink till the morning with these guys. And when he went into the room, the lights were off. When he turned them on, the tables were all at the side. There's no one in there. So he just ran home.
Oh.
Well, or ran to where he knew someone who lived. So, yeah. But before we move on, do you want to just tell the people about your show and what you guys discuss and what you look into, etc.?
Yeah, so we talk about most things paranormal. So cryptids, UFO sightings, aliens, hauntings, possessions. And then we also have listener submitted stories, which are some of our favorite just because they're a little bit more personal. And then we're the part of Believing the Bizarre. At the end of every episode, we rate whether or not we find these stories believable.
That's interesting because I know, Charlie, you were talking about listening to the finale that we just had for The Dark Paranormal.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned to the listeners, one of our own team didn't believe the story. And on the very polar opposite, another member of the team said they would refuse to listen to the recorded edition after reading it because they had the feeling that in doing so, something bad would happen, sort of thing. So it's interesting that you guys rate those stories on a believability factor after reading them out.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. It's always hard to do a listener submission, but we still do it. We give our honest reviews.
You mean it's hard to rate it low?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, it can feel kind of like...
It doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. But it's like, if you're going to take the time to send us a story, like, it would hurt our credibility if every listener submission was always believable. But sometimes you just get them and you're like, I appreciate you sent us this.
I believe you believe something happened.
Yeah, that's the best way of framing it. Is like, yeah. I believe you believe that this happened, but I think it could have been.
I've been told that about my doll story. It's like people believe that I believe it happened, but I swear to God it did.
Yeah. It's a strange one because that's what we do here with the guys. It's like they will sift through initially, and then we will have like a meeting once a week where we'll go around and say, right, who believes it? And if all our hands go up, it goes in. And if it doesn't, I like them. I used to not use them if it was a split vote. I'd say no then, just a blanket no. Mm-hmm. And we've now turned it around so that it's a case of, okay, we'll say to the listeners, we're split on this. So this is down to you. You know, it's like what you believe. If you think it's fake, then don't worry. So do half of our team. If you think it's real, don't worry. So do half of our team. And even with that finale, we have people who've been sending us messages saying, I believe it. And other people saying, I can see why they think it's fake. So it's an interesting thing just to be upfront and say, we don't know. So literally, what do you guys think? I think it makes people listen out more for the, you know, if there's an obvious trope that's just been thrown.
Yeah. In. Yeah.
But I'd like to think we'd pick that up. I'd hope we would anyway. So what's going to happen on this episode then, guys, is Tyler and Charlie, as I say, are going to read us one of their favorite and scariest experiences. And I said to the gents, pick one that's either famous or one you've received or one you've looked into, just something that's genuinely terrified you. And then we'll discuss at the end. So who's going to go first?
I'll go first. We didn't discuss this. I feel like we should have discussed that.
I said, you went first when we had Kevin on ours.
Okay, so I'll actually go first again then, is what I'm hearing.
I have no preference.
Okay, cool. So, and it's cool if like this is a story. Like I summarized it, but it's also like written like a story. Is that cool?
Of course, yeah. I mean, the premise, I mean, all I genuinely want from you guys, for both me and our listeners, because right now I feel like a listener. So that's why I'm kind of excited about it. So, however, the only caveat is that it scared you.
Okay, got you. Okay.
I will say also, too, we are more of a comedy podcast than anything else. Just make sure your listeners know that.
Yeah, it's a fun line to toe because sometimes, yeah, there's silly stuff out there, but then you get a story and you're just like, there's no humor to bring into this one today.
Yeah, and also I feel like I should kind of back you guys up there because I did have a former podcast, which, you know, it was a bit more, it had more levity to it. And that's why I went the absolute opposite way. Mm-hmm. So just so our listeners are all aware, when Charlie says it's a more of a comedy podcast, it's more informal, really. You guys just have, you know, chats amongst yourselves, yeah. Don't you? And you find humor if it's there. It's not, I don't want our guys to think that it's just, you know,
the jokes the whole time.
Jokes, yeah. And fart sounds and things like that, when it's totally not. I've listened to your episodes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's not a case of like two breakfast jocks. It's not nothing like that. It's a serious look by two guys just who are friends.
I think it's difficult too because like we have to identify as a comedy podcast because Apple just refuses to create a paranormal category.
Yeah.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
We're natural sciences and documentary and comedy.
Social. And
social commentary. Yeah. Yeah. It's like just make a parent. There's enough
just
of us.
Just do it. There's pressure.
There's enough of us.
Yeah. There's an RPG one. It's like,
yeah.
Have a paranormal one. It's like, there's not an RPG category in the library, but there's a paranormal section.
Exactly.
We should go right out. We should get a petition from all the paranormal podcasters.
Yes.
Yeah. I'd sign it.
Okay. So, and I'll kind of preface it with this. When we saw your email and it was like, hey, pick a story, this one immediately jumped out to me. Because in our experience, and I'm sure a lot in yours as well, from receiving stories, is you get the story and you know, the creepy moments and the spooky encounters are the highlight. And then it's like, that's it. This is one of the first few stories that we've ever covered from a listener submission where it's like, it really puts you in the place of, what does the person experiencing the haunting actually go through when the hauntings aren't happening? Like, how does it affect you emotionally, mentally, in your day-to-day life? And that, okay, for that reason, this one has always stuck with me.
This one's intense. I mean, this one, I remember when we did this one, I took some time and reflected and...
Let's really hype this one up. So some of you are too afraid to keep listening after this. I'm totally just kidding. All right, so this was sent to us by our listener, Dan, and it took place in 2012 in Michigan, the state of Michigan. So he was attending Lake Superior State University and decided to move off campus to save money because colleges pay money suck. And his friend Vinny connected him with a landlord who had an available duplex, and it was next to where Vinny was currently staying, his friend Vinny. And rent was still pricey, so Dan invited his girlfriend Amy to move in with him. So it's this duplex, it's Dan, it's his friend Vinny, and it's Dan's girlfriend Amy. And they're all living together for this semester. Well, probably the year, I would say. Apparently, Dan was also in an amateur paranormal investigation group. So that's just a little bit of background there. And Amy and Vinny were outright skeptics of the paranormal. They didn't believe anything.
Okay.
So Dan and his roommates didn't move in until fall, but Dan checked on the apartment periodically over summer because they still had rights to it. And every visit, he immediately just felt this wave of unease when he would walk inside, this feeling of being watched, this feeling like he wasn't alone. So that would lead to these periodic visits in the summer to be pretty brief. It was come in, make sure everything's good, and just dip out.
Yeah.
So once the roommates all moved in, he said for about 6 weeks, things felt pretty comfortable. But then October of 2012, Amy and Dan returned from a baby shower to find Vinny sitting outside the house in just his boxers. Apparently, the bathtub had backed up, and the landlord instructed Vinny to head to the basement to unclog the drain. And knowing that Dan, the friend Dan, was more mechanically inclined, Vinny decided just to wait for them. And while waiting for them, he heard the front door slam. So he's thinking, okay, they're back, they're home. But when he goes upstairs, the apartment is completely empty. And thinking that maybe they were outside, he went outside to go check. The door slammed shut behind him, and both the doorknob handle lock and the deadbolt shuts behind him.
Wow. See, that's next level.
Okay. Yeah. So now back to the perspective of Dan and Amy. They come home. They do check. The deadbolt was engaged. It was locked. And so Dan tries to rationalize this as the force of the slamming, maybe from the wind, caused the deadbolt to...
If I was a skeptic, I could see that, especially if it's coming in one way, a heavy object could, arguably, I could see why you try and rationalize it in that way.
Sure.
This feels like any excuse at that point. Like, maybe a raccoon snuck in and locked it for me. I don't know.
Yeah.
So once they unlock the door, they head to the basement to unclog the drain. And he describes the basement as a very classic Michigan basement. I've actually never been to Michigan.
I've been to Michigan one time, but I've never been to a Michigan basement. I feel like I probably would have been killed if I had.
Knock on a door. May I check your basement? Yes.
Is there anything specific about, like, is... Am I missing a trick here being from England? Is there a thing about Michigan basements?
This is what he
designed in a certain way? Or?
He describes it as field stone walls, a dirt floor, and a single small light bulb near the entrance.
So it looks like a horror movie.
Yeah. Horror movie basement, I guess.
Yeah.
Don't go there. So as they're working to unclog this toilet, they start noticing that they're being pelted by little fragments of gravel. And at first, it's just an occasional. It's like one piece. And then another piece. But then it escalates to handfuls of dirt, of pellets being thrown at them. And
from within the garage?
Inside the basement where they're working.
Basement, not garage.
Yeah. They're being pelted. And when they're ready to leave, they hear this loud bang. And Dan looks and he sees this stone the size of a brick on the ground. Like somebody had hurled this brick-sized stone at them.
Jeez.
So that's October.
I mean, what's interesting is the throwing of gravel it's a well-documented escalation of poltergeist activity.
Yeah.
The throwing of gravel, there's a house somewhere in the UK. The woman was reporting to the police, kids were throwing stones at the house. And the police ended up waiting outside the house, like in a cul-de-sac, to catch these kids. And she came out and like said, why aren't you catching them? And they were kind of saying, no one's been near your house. But there was all stones at the bottom of a window where they'd been thrown from seemingly nowhere. But it's interesting, this throwing of gravel does seem to be a...
Yeah. Pete the Poltergeist used to throw pennies.
Yeah, I know. If they're throwing money at me, that's cool. Throw some quarters at me. It's all good. I'm going to Aldi.
It's a tip.
So the next event took place in November, the next month. Amy was starring in a play that weekend and invited out-of-town friends to watch and spend the night. And after the show, They were just hanging out at this duplex, drinking, playing board games. Around 1 a.m., they turned it in. So Amy and Dan went to their room. Vinny went to his room. The friends had a pullout couch in the living room. And approximately 3 a.m., Amy and Dan were woken up by pounding on their bedroom door. And their friends were just standing there in shock. So their friends tell Amy and Dan that a large shadow figure had shaken them awake in the living room. And they also saw what appeared to be two figures, a man and a woman, arguing violently in the kitchen, with the man appearing to strike the woman. And when the friends rushed to the kitchen, it was completely empty, but all of the lights were on.
I forgot about that part.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
And Vinny, they checked on Vinny, and he said that he'd been woken by a loud banging in the living room, but was experiencing sleep paralysis. He said it felt like an elephant was sitting on him, and he was really freaked out and disturbed from that. He didn't say it was sleep paralysis. He said it felt like he was being pinned to his bed. I'm assuming it was sleep paralysis,
that's
but
that classic.
That was his
Yeah.
So moving on to winter break, when they returned in January of 2013, they found the apartment in a rough state. Every window was open. The front door was wide open. All the lights were on. The faucets were running. And the thermostat had been cranked to 80 degrees Fahrenheit. Wow. So they called the police because they're, I don't think in this moment they're thinking paranormal despite everything else happening. I think people were in our home. And so the officers arrive. They find no signs of forced entry, no footprints other than the roommates from previous time spent there. But apparently the responding officer noted that this wasn't the first call to this address for suspicious or unusual activity. And the house was well known locally as being allegedly haunted, and it was rumored to have one time been a brothel.
Wow.
So.
And they were in an apartment, so it was like a house converted into a duplex.
That's the way that I took it. Yeah, it's that it's a duplex. Yeah. It probably at one time was a bigger house.
It was all one house.
But he's like, why charge one people rent when I can charge two people?
Capitalism.
Yes. So after this revelation, the haunting intensified and began to take a toll on the roommates. Dan began having a recurring nightmare in which he woke up alone in bed, paralyzed, watching a thick, living blackness slowly seep through the cracked bedroom door and creep toward him. And the dream recurred so often, and it freaked him out so badly that he started deliberately avoiding sleep. And the sleep deprivation hit him pretty hard. His grades collapsed. He fell behind on his thesis work, and his professors began noticing, and he just told them that he was having sleep troubles. I don't think he wanted to get into it too much, and said that he was suffering from depression, which was obviously both true, I imagine. And he began seeing shadow figures moving through the kitchen in the apartment at night and would hear distant, muffled arguing where he could never fully make out what they were saying, and he started seeing a therapist. Amy began losing personal items, specific items, her childhood photo from a photo album that she had, her baby blanket, and even underwear of hers began missing. And at this time, Amy and Dan started fighting constantly over the tiniest of things, things that should have never been an issue and were never an issue between them before they moved into this house. But Vinny was going through it. By late January, Vinny stopped leaving his room. He would text Dan for food to be brought to him. He stopped attending classes, and the only signs of life from his closed door room were the faint sound of sitcoms and the smell of marijuana. And when Dan eventually did kind of force his way in and check on him, he opened the door and found Vinny covered in scratch marks on his arm and smelling like he hadn't bathed in weeks.
And is there any sort of implication that the scratch marks were self-inflicted or? Is it implied in that way?
It's implied. You know, there is no implication.
Yeah.
It was just
that's interesting.
Just scratch marks.
Because the way that I view this is that.
Well, he didn't have a girl over.
The story was sent to us, obviously, after the fact, like probably almost 10 years after the fact. From what he said in the email that didn't make the episode, I don't believe they're friends anymore.
No, they weren't.
So I don't think it can be something. We're not getting Vinny insight here. Like the way that a storyteller would be like, this is what I was going through. This is what I was having. This is told from Dan's perspective, so he can only speak to what Vinny had told him.
Or what he saw, too.
Yeah.
So, in April of 2013, getting close to the end of the school year, Dan was called in by his academic advisor and told that he would not be able to graduate given his standing, and she offered to let him drop all of his courses under a hardship provision, and he accepted. And being a good friend, Dan asked about Vinny, trying to be helpful, and said, could Vinny go through the same thing, too? I know he's having some hardship. And the advisor told him, which I don't know if she's allowed to tell him this, but this is, she told him that Vinny had already dropped all of his classes back in February. And even though that feels kind of obvious, that really sent a chill down Dan's spine, because it's like he thought he was just avoiding the classes, but whatever he was going through 2 months prior, because this is April, caused him just to drop everything and just kind of rot away in his bedroom. So.
And also not share that information with the people he's living with.
Yeah, exactly. So Dan immediately went home, got them all out of the apartment, and was like, we're going to dinner. We're getting out of here. We're going to talk. We're going to dinner. Let's get out of here. And for the first time, he opened up to them about what he had been experiencing, because they were all kind of keeping it in. So he talked about the shadow figures. He talked about the dream. They all agreed that they felt trapped in the house, and they made the decision to break the lease early and just move out that weekend. So on the moving day, the three of them began loading Dan's father's truck with all their stuff, but discovered that they couldn't fit everything in one trip. So Dan and Vinny took the first load while Amy stayed behind to finish packing. And when they returned, they found Amy sitting on the front of the apartment, pale, shaken, obviously disturbed. And she said while moving the microwave, she discovered a hidden nook. And inside this nook were all of her missing belongings, her underwear, her baby blanket, and her photo album. And she said that the photos had been defaced, specifically the females. Every female face had been scratched out, only the women.
Wow.
And she said as she is staring at this photo album, freaking out, making this realization, that the door flew open. And she heard a voice inside the duplex screaming at her to get out. So she left, and they loaded up, and they left. And Dan said the moment they kind of left the vicinity, it just felt like this weighted blanket had been lifted off of him.
Wow. Now, I mean, I don't know what, I think it's, well, I do know why, actually. But for me, and I don't know whether you've obviously discussed this prior when you got it,
yeah,
and when you were talking about it on your show, did you make any sort of suggestions or guesses about Vinny and the missing items of Amy?
Yeah, I think there was, though. That was,
I'll be honest, I don't remember much what we
that
said.
That was the jokier portions of the episode. The jokier portions were that Vinny was just playing. I don't know if we were quite playing, was probably too hard to say. But yes, Vinny was the cause of the disturbance, and he's the one that collected her stuff, and he was messing with them.
I think, given the condition that you say he was found in, I say this because I mentioned on the show, one of the best stories I've been told by a friend was, and obviously I'll keep their name private, but their father was going through some mental issues, and the mother was blaming this girl who's a friend and her brother, who were about maybe 10 or 12 or something at the time, for the strange things that were going on in the house. So, for example, she'd go in and find her perfume bottles had been arranged in size order.
Mm.
And she blamed the kids. And they were like, we haven't been in here. We've been in the back garden. And then if anything was a bit too strange, for example, there was claw marks found at about 6'3" on the outside of the door.
Oh.
The inside of the wall. And that night, the girl had saw a hand come around the side of the wall and thought not more of it, thinking it might be a dad who was, by all accounts, a bit, you know, deranged, but not in an abusive way, just in a more he didn't know what was going on sort of way. So she assumed it was him. But the next morning, she woke up to her mother screaming at her, why have you clawed the wallpaper? And she was like, I'm 4'9".
Yeah.
You know, there's no way I can get up there. And it's interesting because the way she told the story without meaning to, and this is what sent a chill down my spine, she just told the story how it was, but it was perfectly told, and you knew it was genuine, but it was perfectly told in a way where you were automatically thinking, I don't know if that was your dad or if it was some sort of spirit or evil entity, or if it was an evil entity working via your dad with his mental illness. But there was definitely something amiss. And that's why when you say the state that Vinny was left in, was scratching himself, etc. You know, I think sometimes people, if they're in a very vulnerable mental state, an evil spirit could get them to do their bidding.
Absolutely.
And then that person not be aware.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? They'll just go and sit them back down where they were, and they'll come to and think they haven't moved. But in reality, they've walked into Amy's room and stolen a photo album and put it in the nook and all.
Well, he's also the narrator. Sorry, he's not a narrator. He's the character in this story who we don't get the perspective of, but he was physically there for all of it. So like he was there, like he told them what happened when he was sitting outside in his boxers. He was in the basement when the things were getting thrown. He had access to Amy's belongings. He was not in the living room. He was in his own room when they were talking about the shadow figure. Now, I don't know how he could make a man and a woman argue in a kitchen and then disappear. Like that, I can't explain. Yeah. But for some of it, he is kind of like the outside but close enough person, but not strong enough. I don't feel strong enoughly about it to say that I think he's.
It seems to me like he suffered probably the most.
Yeah, I think there's a chance he was behind some of it, but not like it. There's still, to me, it sounds like there's still some sort of paranormal malevolence going on.
Yeah,
and he's a tool of it, you know,
like the conduit so to carry out the bidding,
exactly,
so to speak.
Yeah, exactly, and especially if he's not telling them things such as I dropped out of school 2 months ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a big secret to keep, you know.
Yeah, it really is, because you would imagine that the narrator would be saying to him, "Why aren't you in class again?" So he must be lying to keep up the pretense. You know,
yeah,
but as you say, we don't have his point,
right? I don't know. This was one of the first episodes we ever did where it's like it was a real, like, we lost friendships. I was depressed, I couldn't graduate. You know, I broke up with my girlfriend because we couldn't get through. You know, it's like those behind the scenes of like if you live in a haunted house or you live in a terribly haunted space, even for a year, what's happening in the moments, the noises and the scratches and the steps and the shadows aren't appearing. It's still tragic.
It's really a good point. Yeah, it's that sort of, I mean, from the perspective of somebody who, like yourselves, runs a show, I mean, I am completely reliant on the listeners sending their darker experiences in. But the better experiences, it's strange you bringing that up, because that's kind of like the glue that holds a really strong episode together. You know, literally looking at it from a black and white, I want a good experience to tell the listeners. It's the unspoken parts, the non-terrifying parts. Like you're saying, you know, what happens when there's no haunting going on?
Mm-hmm.
We had a guy send a really good email in the other month, actually. And he put I can't remember whether he put a theory across, I did, or it was one of our listeners. But he'd lost a relative, a really close relative, and his flat was haunted. And he noticed, the way he put in his email was something like, the one positive about this person's death is the haunting stopped. And then about 6 months later, it picked back up. And I can't remember who stated it, but the idea was when somebody was so like consumed with grief, perhaps they didn't notice the ongoing haunting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're really like head in hands because your partner's just died, a cup moving 3 inches by its own to the right here, your brain's probably going, we don't have the capacity to deal with it, so we're not going to see it. Do you know? And then as he eased out of the grief, he eased into being able to see these things again.
Right.
So we were kind of questioning, did the haunting stop, or was it always there at a certain level? And almost your grief volume came down to such a point you could hear the haunting again.
Yeah.
I do want to ask you a quick question, because I know you're mindful of tropes when you get stories, and you're more vigilant with the stories that you put on than we do. Now, let me say up front, we both went believable on this story. I still stand by believable. We both think this is paranormal. But I know you are aware of tropes. When the first time we did the story, I know it happened, and it happened again as I was reviewing it recently. For whatever reason, the moment when she finds the book and the face is scratched out, which that part is, I love that reveal, you know, but then the door swings open and she hears a voice yell, "Get out." That was the first moment in the whole story where I was like,
Yeah, I mean, I must admit that the nook part is slightly tropey. That's in a good few films. The scratching out of faces in photographs is in many more films.
Yes.
And obviously the door flying open and Get Out, that's literally a scene from Amityville. So, but at the same time, and this is kind of the thing that, because we did have an email of someone saying, all you seem to be covering recently is Shadow Men. It was kind of like, well, maybe that's all that's happening now.
Yeah.
There are no rules to this. It's
let
like,
me make up something for I mean, you real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I could, you can only fight the person in front of you. Do you know what I mean? In terms of like, you can only say the story that's been sent in. And also we don't know how this works. And I do use this as an analogy, not an analogy, but like a kind of thing to point to say, for example, during COVID, I went through a mad phase of watching all of Nuke's top five. Like I found the channel. I don't know whether you're aware of it. It's basically he gets that week's, or listeners or watchers on YouTube, send him paranormal clips they found online. Mm. Like they're only like 10 or 15 seconds long. And he puts them all together for a top 10 once a week. It was once a week. He's gone to like twice a month now. But there's about 400 or 500 on there. And over COVID, and we were all locked in our houses, I binge watched this. And there was one particular type of caught on tape spirit that was set. And I couldn't tell you whether it was episode 76, then episode 243. But I know they were so disparate that he didn't pick up on this link, but I did. I like, as in the number of times this was seen. And it's like I've said it on the show, if you tied a fishing wire to a piece of net, like black net, and you just flung it around the air like a wraith from Harry Potter or something similar. Anyway, one was seen in Hong Kong about 30 episodes later, one's in Australia, 50 episodes later, one's in America. And it is the same, the identical sort of spirit. And when I seen the fifth one about 5 days in, I was like, this is a real thing. It's the same thing in every country that it's been sent in from. And I just could not get my head around it. But yeah, and as I say, I use that just in terms of we don't understand. There may be families, you know, and I mean families in terms of category, you know, like, for example, this thing I'm saying is a piece of net on a fishing wire. That might fall under some category if we were all able to see everything that exists in the paranormal sphere and give it a terminology. But we don't, and we can't. But yeah, that's a fascinating story, that. And I don't, with the exception of what you've pointed out trope-wise, the rest of it doesn't follow any sort of pattern.
No, it doesn't.
Like traditional pattern.
I do remember fighting pretty hard. I was like, no, it's fine. It's fine at the end if it goes tropey because the rest was incredible. And I think we had some back and forth about that.
You could argue as well, in their favor, why throw something that tropey in?
Yeah.
If it wasn't real? You know, because if you've got a great story that you know is real, why then say, and then a guy with the red and black jumper turned up with a handful of knives in my dream, you know.
Unless he was there.
Just put the bow on top.
Yeah.
But also, like, we don't know what mental state she was in when she found her belongings in a nook. Like, could she have imagined it? Like, it's one of those things we said at the top. I believe that she believes that she heard that. Yeah. And wanted to get the hell out of that duplex.
Somebody made a great point very early on about these sorts of tales sent in, saying one thing that should be a prerequisite is that people do a carbon monoxide test in the home. You know, because all three people could just be hallucinating. And It's a very good point, but we simply don't know.
Yeah.
And it really used to annoy me that we wouldn't know, but you have to learn to accept that, obviously, we're never going to find out.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, then. Charlie, take it away.
If you've been sitting on a business idea, Shopify makes it easy to make it happen. Everything you need to start selling is included and ready from day one. As someone who's turned a podcast into a business, I know how daunting it can seem. But with Shopify, from the moment your first customer is ready to pay, Shopify checkout helps all of them finish their purchases. And when they come back, their details are already saved. One tap and they're done. I know how daunting it can seem to think, how am I going to get paid, etc. Shopify have that covered from day one. And because Shopify have built that structure to handle the setup, the checkout, etc., that means you have more time to focus on your ideal business, to grow your passions, to grow your business. And it gives you the tools to do it. And don't think Shopify is for people starting out. Shopify powers millions of known businesses worldwide. Household names like Mattel and Gymshark, to small businesses like the one you're going to start. And starting on the same platform used by the likes of Mattel and Gymshark is not a bad way to start any business. With Shopify, nothing stands between you, your idea, and a real business. So go make it one. Start your free trial at shopify.com/darkparanormal. Start believing you can achieve your dreams. Go and start your free trial at shopify.com/darkparanormal. There's not much you can do about the money you have now, but if you want to do something about the money you could have tomorrow, Acorns wants to help. And with the Acorns Potential screen, you can find out what your money is capable of. Acorns is a smart way to give your money a chance to grow. It's easy. You can sign up in minutes and start automatically investing your spare money, even if all you have is spare change. Because Acorns grows with you. Whether you're just starting out or thinking about settling down, Acorns supports your big and small goals across every life stage. And the Acorns Potential screen shows you the power of compounding and how your money can grow over time. Plus, you can quickly adjust how much you're investing every day, every week, or month to make sure you're building toward your goals. Acorns is an all-in-one. No more finance apps cluttering up your phone. With Acorns, you can invest, save, and give your money a chance to grow in one trusted place. I've had and used many financial applications, but the specific thing about the Acorns app I love is the potential screen. Of all the apps I've used, it gives me such a clear picture of the opportunities for my cash to grow. So sign up now, and Acorns will boost your new account with a $5 bonus investment. Join the over 14 million all-time customers who've already saved and invested over $22 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/darkparanormal or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsements. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. T2 compensation provided. Potential subject to various factors such as customers' accounts, age, and investment settings. Does not include Acorns fees. Results do not predict or represent the performance of any Acorns portfolio. Investment results will vary. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/darkparanormal. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It seems true to say that the conversation of mental health in 2026 seems easier to have. However, there is still a disconnect between talking about mental health and actively asking for help. Every single last one of us will have a period in our lives where the overwhelm is just overwhelming. Although it's now easier to discuss mental health, there is still a stigma. BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Americans and revealed that 85% of Americans believe getting support is wise. Yet 74% say society discourages people from doing so. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform. It served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on 1.7 million reviews, it speaks for itself. And BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. And BetterHelp's 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right first time. But if you aren't happy with your match, simply tell them, and they will switch you to a different therapist at any time from their tailored recommendations. Do not let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Yeah, so I've got a story. This is not a listener submission. I did actually pitch this to our Patreon over the weekend. I was like, guys, help, because we get so many stories, and like, none of them popped out to me. I think it was just an overwhelmed kind of thing, but I like panicked. I was like, I don't know anything. What even is a podcast?
I need a good one.
Yeah. And our listeners, they, to their credit, they did suggest a couple of really good stories. They were Tyler's stories.
My argument was you didn't need to do one that you presented, though.
I told
you. Could have been fun to do one that I presented.
Yeah, well, I didn't.
Yeah.
I did a famous story. So this is supposedly one of the darkest possession stories ever told. I'd be interested to know if your listeners know it before I even say it, but it's the story of Gottlieben Dürtis. And it takes place in 1840. And basically, her and her siblings lived in a small town about an hour away from Munich, and after the death of their parents. Shortly after, they moved into this new apartment, and that's when they moved into the new apartment, and strange things, of course, immediately start to happen, poltergeist-like things. Loud bangs, knocks, footsteps, and unexplained noises echoing throughout the house day and night. And the disturbances become so severe that the neighbors can even hear these things from the outside. At some time, Gottlieben began to suffer an unexplained illness, and violent fits. So she started having like these seizures, and she never really recovered from these. So during
and these were new to her, right?
Yeah, they were new to her.
Never happened prior.
She didn't have a history of that. No one had a history of that in the family. It just started.
How old was she? Just out of interest, do we know?
We don't know. I think she was between like 16 and 18. She wasn't very old.
Okay.
She was a kid.
Yeah.
And during prayer, she would suddenly collapse and enter stages or states of unconsciousness. Now, what initially appeared to be sickness slowly evolved into something much stranger. And one of the most disturbing elements of this case involves this apparition. Gottlieben repeatedly claimed that she was been visited by a ghost of a deceased woman from this village. And this woman would appear holding a dead child and stare silently at her bedside. And this figure sometimes spoke to her, telling her that she wanted to be left alone. And do you remember this part? Because like, it was weird to us because the figure...
She's setting up to say, I want to be left alone.
You came here. This is my room. What are you doing?
Yeah.
No, that makes me think. We just had a listener submission story where this woman was seeing the ghost of a Nazi officer holding a child's head.
Yeah.
And it's Christ. Just so... Yeah, and then Charlie was like, why didn't you make that image the graphic for the episode?
I know, yeah.
I did text him that, yeah.
But again, that's one of them where you're like, if you're going to invent something, who would jump to that?
Right.
Yeah.
You know.
So this apparition became more frequent and the haunting intensified. And that led to a local pastor, Jonathan Christian Blumhart, to suspect something supernatural was occurring. And the investigation searched the home, and that's when they found old packaging hidden between the floorboards, underneath the floorboards around the property. And they reportedly contained chalk, salt, bones, coins, paper, powders, and other assorted folklore magic things in them.
Mm. The assorted folklore magic.
I mean, you can get that at any store.
Yeah, local apothecary.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lucky dip.
Blumhart believed that these items could be connected with the occult rituals, and they decided to burn them. But after they burned them, that's when things got even worse.
Yeah, I was going to say that's not the smartest move to do.
Eventually, all the activity focused almost entirely on Gottlieben. Now, she suffered more violent convulsions, foaming from her mouth, trance-like stares, extreme personality changes, self-inflicted wounds, blasphemous outbursts, and hatred toward people of religion and religious symbols. Witnesses described her body twisting into painful positions while she appeared unconscious. At times, she reported to speak in voices that did not sound like her own and reacted violently whenever prayers were spoken around her. And one of the most famous reports indicates that Blumhardt invoked the name of Jesus. And when he did that, Godelbin cried out, "I cannot bear that name." She said at the exorcism, Blumhardt became convinced that multiple spirits were present. And she did say that initially there were 14 demons inhabiting her. But later, she claimed there were 425. And eventually, the number reached to 1,067 demons.
Wow. That's just
it's a lot in there.
How do you get to that conclusion?
I feel like they had a house party and just like they started coming in slowly.
It's like the her body was a New York apartment building. Like that's like so many like that.
It is. It's a strange thing because firstly, the fact this took place in Munich, obviously Germany, and was Annalise Michal Austria?
I think she was also. I did the episode too. I think she was also German.
Yeah. Was she? I think so. Because if she was also German, there's a strong correlation here.
Yeah.
Which makes me kind of, because I know that she come after this.
Oh, much after. Yeah. This is much.
If she, it's making me now think, and I'll look into it personally, just out of interest. But if there's any way she could have been influenced by this,
and potentially,
you know, it's making me think. Have a bit of doubt on the Annalise Michal sort of case. Although when you hear the tapes on YouTube of the exorcism, it's a bit...
Was that the '70s?
I
could be really far earlier.
Yeah, earlier. I'm not too sure how early.
I want to say '60s at least.
They could still get, well, the audio recordings are on tape. Yeah. So cassette tapes.
I played a couple on our episode when we did that episode too.
Yeah. Go
ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and she claimed she was infested by 7 demons, I think.
It was...
One being Hitler.
Yeah.
It was, so it was post-World War II.
75 and 76.
Wow.
Okay.
Well,
I didn't know it was that recent.
I didn't either.
I just remember the picture of her, like the good one.
Yeah.
She had like a 70s haircut, from what I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was initially going to do the episode for this because when I was doing that episode, I had this terrible... Like, I was upstairs in my room, and... I remember I had the lamp on, and I just felt this, like, almost like this presence. And I said, well, that's enough of that tonight. And I turned my TV on, and I said, done here. But Godelbin, according to the story, a woman practiced dark magic and murdered children during her life. The apparition condemned her soul and bound her to evil. And this became... This case became infamous because of the physical manifestation specifically, because people witnessed this that she began to vomit pretty frequently, glass shards, nails, pins, wires, knitting needles, shoe buckles, frogs, bats, and locusts.
Wow. Wow.
Her stomach was the nook of the missing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, have you guys seen The Rite? I've talked about this for about the last 5
years. Is that Anthony Hopkins?
I've never seen that.
Yes. So it's based on Gabriel Amorth, the Vatican exorcist, unlike the film that was based on Gabriel Amorth, which had the Australian guy in, which is ridiculous. And he's driving a Harley Davidson and smoking and telling
him,
I won't do what you say and all this. And it's Anthony Hopkins one is an amazing portrayal, but that features like toads and vomit and nails,
yeah,
and crucifixion nails and things like this. It's interesting.
She also had mysterious bleeding and swelling, and she suffered from choking from invisible hands. And there were periods where all these things like poured from her body. And something else too is that they said that she choked herself in the middle of the night, and when they pulled her hands back, her throat was covered with blisters that were full of fluid.
Wow. So as in like something really hot had been strangled.
Yes, yeah.
Wow.
And it was so intense, like her sister even kind of became possessed by proxy. Like she threatened Blumhardt to cut him in half. and other members began displaying other symptoms. And eventually, after 2 years of exorcisms, in a historical account, the outside pot. Eventually, after many podcasts.
Got you started.
1840s podcast.
Yeah. It was in a tin can. Yeah. Eventually, after many exorcisms, they did somehow rid her of these 1,067 demons, and she did live her life, apparently.
So she survived the exorcism.
Yeah, she did. She did. She became married. She got married, and she had kids, and she lived for a couple decades after this event.
What always strikes a lot of people as surprising, but if you look into it, it's a common theme, is people, because they watch The Exorcist, believe an exorcism is a one-time-only deal. Like, the priest turns up, does an exorcism, the demon goes, and off you pop. Whereas, there's a documentary, I don't know what channel it's on now. I think it may be on Prime. But it basically follows a Roman Catholic exorcist in Italy. And there's a woman who comes every month. And she's been coming for the previous 12 months. Because her exorcism, like most exorcisms, they don't do all the theatrical things that you see on TV. It's more of a case of very gently. I think the way the Catholic Church look at it, definitely nowadays, is a case of we're dealing with something potentially explosive in someone.
Mm-hmm.
So we're best spending a year kind of trying to gain its trust and get the name out of it by befriending it, sort of, you know, and trying to keep the damage down to a minimum, as opposed to having what they've done with Roland Doe, like take him to a place and strap him to a bed and stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot more kid glove than it is
I think they're able to put them under, as in, like, that's many people say they've gone under when like the oppression has taken place and the start of the possession has taken place. And it seems like the priests or the exorcists are able to keep them at that state of oppression each time they do the exorcism. So they never fully get into the possession state. But it's like when they're in that state of oppression, they are the link to the demon and the priest. So over this period of months or weeks or whatever, or years even, that link becomes more, you know, a much more wider communication channel, to the point where eventually the priest can say, "So what's your name again?" Almost like a trick. And then the person who's oppressed will be like, Baal. And then they'll go, "Ah, got you." Under the Christ name, get out of it. Be like, "Ah, you got me there, priest."
It was good hanging with you for a year.
Because it can go on for years. But I don't say a lot of times, it can't end well, but that supposedly is one of the darkest, most intense possessions ever.
So I know you listened to this, obviously, recently.
Yeah.
If I could be wrong with this, but I feel like, if I remember correctly, was our only skepticism Blumhardt is the one presenting the story, and he liked the fame.
Yeah.
He wrote a book about it, and he would have been incentivized to embellish. Is that correct?
Yeah, he was the biggest. He wrote the book about it. He was the biggest one putting out the story. The siblings didn't really do much about it. It was really just him. But I will say, on his behalf, Gottlieb Benn did vouch for him, whatever that means.
Yeah. Again, though, you could argue, if you're looking at it very skeptically, who's going to go against your parish priest?
Yeah.
You know, if I was a young person who'd allegedly went through that and my priest helped me and they said anything in the press, if I was now better, I'd be like, top bloke. Yeah. Doesn't tell a lie.
Well, especially a teenage female in the 1840s is, you know.
Like, well, exactly. Yeah. She's hardly going to start saying, talking. No. But they were amazing, guys. Thank you very much. That's like, you know, I love food for thought, and I love things which I can go away and look at myself. So I've never heard of that case, at all. And the line that got me, and I'm sure it did many of our listeners, was when you said the sister became possessed almost by proxy and said she would cut him in half.
Yeah.
See, it's lines like that for me, which I, again, I use the term validator, but things that jump out where you just go, that's not fake.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would say something different. You would do something different. Like I'd say an example of a validator so that you understand kind of where I'm coming from is me and my ex-partner watched the most recent Exorcist film. Well, it was all right. And we got in a taxi, which was about a 3-minute ride home. And the guy just went, oh, what did you go and see? And we said, The Exorcist. And he went, oh, are you into all that? Yeah. Have you ever seen a ghost? I said, I'm not sure. Blah, blah, blah. And he said, I have. I was like, tell me more. So this is what I mean. Like, we watched this film for 2.5 hours. It was all right. Within a minute and a half, this guy was most terrifying. And he was talking about taking a shortcut through a cathedral in Liverpool, which me and my girlfriend have taken many times. And it's basically an old quarry, which was then turned into a cemetery. It's got 42,000 bodies in it. Because it was a lot of it was the Irish famine victims. Mm. A lot of it was workhouse people who just didn't have families. Yeah. So they would all put in one grave. And they would have one stone for maybe 500 people, sort of thing. And it was in this stone quarry. And it's a very eerie place. There's like one wall right at the back where it was a former quarry, like I said.
Yeah, almost like it's a lot of dead people there.
Yeah, yeah. But in that wall, there are arches in this wall. And it turns out that the flats, which are opposite, which used to be standalone houses and then were turned into flats. They were merchant houses because you had a perfect view on this hill to the Mersey, which is the main thing out into the Irish Sea. And in the basement of these flats are tunnels, because if you were rich enough to own one of these houses, you got your own personal vault in the cathedral. So there's tunnels which go directly under the street and into this vault. That's why these arches are there. And allegedly they've all been filled in. But this guy was telling us he walked through this thing as a shortcut with his girlfriend, and his girlfriend stopped and stopped him and said, look at that. And he said there was a woman. Now, it was the way he described her that I thought, validator. He said there was a woman. He said, and he's looking in the rearview mirrors. He's telling me, you know, when he's dead Liverpudlian, so he's, oh, mate, it was terrifying. And all this. And he's saying, the way he described her was, he said she was like in her 80s. He said she was just white. So I jumped ahead and said, and she was staring at you? And he went, no. He said she was looking like directly ahead of where she was. She was stood behind a grave with her hands on the grave. He said, and she was wearing what looked like a bodice. In the mirror, he's going, it's like this, like a ribbed sort of thing. He said, like a body warmer. And I knew what he meant. And then before I could say it, he said, and she had like a bonnet on. And I thought, he's described, without knowing it, the burial garments of someone when this first became a cemetery. Because there is a carving of it when, if you Google Edward Kelly and, Edward Kelly and Joseph, I can't remember the other guy's name. That'll kill me, that. But anyway, Edward Kelly necromancy, if you Google that, you'll see him and his cohort. And in this protective circle is a dead person they've rose up, and they are wearing this exact outfit. And he described it. But there is no way on earth this Liverpudlian taxi driver has seen a woodcut of Edward Kelly raising the dead. So that for me, I was like, he can't know that. He can't know that. He described it as a body warmer. You know, there's he didn't know he was describing perfectly what they would have been buried in that day and age.
That gave me shivers.
Yeah, man. That's creepy. Yeah, that's so creepy.
Exactly. And I was like, you know what? Let's never go to pictures again. Let's just get taxis.
Oh.
So thank you guys. That's been really entertaining. Now, as a kind of thank you, please tell our listeners how all about yourselves, how they can find you, where they can find you.
Yeah, if you search Believing the Bizarre, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, we're on YouTube, TikTok. We release episodes every Tuesday.
Yeah, one of the most recent episodes we put out was with you.
So that'd be
easy. It's a way to ease
maybe
in.
Start there.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe start there. It'll feel familiar and friendly. And then you can work your way out.
Yeah, that's a good point. And then, obviously, you're on all of the main platforms.
Yeah, Apple, also, Spotify, iHeart.
YouTube as well.
YouTube.
You see our faces.
If you want to see us, if you prefer listening, we're there too. But yeah.
Yeah, you do, because you do, you are, I mean, I'm starting video from next season, but you guys are way ahead of the curve there. You should have already entered the fray.
Yeah, I don't love it. I miss just being audio only, but video is so important.
Us work on ourselves.
Yeah. And I mean, Apple's just dropping video now too. So
yeah. It's a great time to be doing it. I think as I say, starting now really puts you ahead of the curve.
Yes.
So well done with that one. This isn't going to be video, by the way. So don't
thank God.
I know. Well, we didn't record it, so
that's worked out well.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure I picked my nose in this. So
okay, well, Tyler and Charlie from Believe in the Bizarre, thank you very much for coming on and telling us two tales that were terrifying, that had everything that I love about a good paranormal tale, stuff to go away and investigate, stuff that you just have to sit and think with. And especially with the latter story, that's got stuff we can go away and actually tangibly investigate ourselves. So you gave us everything there. So I really want to thank both of you for taking the time to spend it with us for our pre-show before our season 25. So thank you guys. And if there's anything else you want to add before you just head off.
I'm excited for season 25.
Yeah. Thank you for having us on too. We really appreciate it.
No, thank you for having me on your show. It's really good. I can sometimes, because people will, and I know this from experience, having done a paranormal show with a bit of levity, they can look at it in the wrong way. They can think that you don't know what you're talking about because you've added a bit of levity to a show. And I just wanted to reiterate that's not the case with your show. And it's also useful for me as well to remember that there's levity to be had in this. Especially this season we've just had, there was two particular recording sessions and the listeners know. And at the end, I was like, this doesn't happen, but I don't feel comfortable. And it was a cumulative thing. I was really happy when the season ended and that's not like me. And it was, you know, I'm not also saying because some evil force was building, but it was uncomfortable. And it's good to have conversations like this to know that there's still, you know, levity to be had there and that we should all not take it so seriously, but at the same time, be terrified. So
terrified, respectful, but not too seriously.
Yeah. Thanks, Kevin.
Exactly. Yeah. If you can manage those three things, which contradict each other all the way.
Yeah.
But genuinely, guys, thank you for your time. And it's been an absolute pleasure.